What's up, everyone? We're going to start the show today with a very cool announcement. We are doing a live show on Saturday, June 5th.
Live show.
Live show. Live show.
We back on stage.
Stage. Stage.
More exciting than that, myself and a friend of the show, Dan Beckner, have programmed an entire damn streaming music and podcast festival.
Festival.
That Chapo's going to be headlining. All the acts will be performing live at the venue elsewhere here in Brooklyn, and it's going to be streamed over a new platform built specifically for live performances called Frequency.live. That's FRQNCY.live. The lineup is extremely dope. We've got Chapo headlining the pod stage, and our friends Every Time I Die headlining the band stage. You guys have been doing
Mama,
a good show.
Mama,
right?
Don't want to die. Mama, I don't want to die.
For pods and comedy, we've also got our boys Episode 1 playing. Some of my old friends, We Hate Movies, are going to be on the pod stage. Tinder Live with Lane Moore, a very funny online dating comedy show. And, of course, the very stylish boys of the Throwing Fits podcast making their stage debut. For bands, Every Time I Die, we've got synth god Zola Jesus playing. Downtown Boys, the best communist punk band with a saxophone in the game. And the great new indie punk act Pom Pom Squad. Finally, rounding it out, we've got Bryn Niebuhr from the Gen Loss podcast and BP Lettuce's acclaimed fifth wave emo act, Stay Inside. So it's going to be sick. The pre-sale starts today, and for $15, you get access to the whole day's events, 1 p.m. to midnight, streaming on the Frequency.live site. The platform is really cool.
Yes,
it's like a cross.
Yes, sir. Sorry, I'm just hyping it up.
You're just hyping it up. Thank you. The platform is really cool. It's like a cross between Twitch and Discord. You can join in a big public Twitch-like chat while you watch.
TwitchCore.
Or you can meet up with friends in smaller private video chat breakout rooms, like you're group watching something over Zoom or Discord. I've watched shows on it with the team. It's really cool. I could imagine using it after the pandemic to see shows I couldn't personally attend.
Breakout room. Do cocaine with your friends in the bathroom. But virtually.
Yes.
It's a breakout room.
Everybody can meet in the digital bathroom on the platform. And also, Dan and I and the whole Frequency team are trying to build a new type of cooperative festival. All the artists are included in a profit sharing with the fest, so once we hit our modest break-even numbers of ticket sales, part of all profits made are redistributed back to the bands and also to the Save Our Stages funds to help support independent venues. If this thing is a success, we hope to do more and eventually using this platform to set up fests and improve access to them and create a cooperative festival model that offers artists and venues better deals than fucking Golden Voice or Ticketmaster or any of those demonic, huge music corporations.
Demons. They're demons.
So to make this thing a success, for you, the listener, attendance is mandatory. Buy the tickets. You get 12 hours of music and comedy entertainment for $15. Chapo is planning something really cool for this. These bands rock. I love all these pods. Buy the tickets. You can attend the stream from anywhere in the world. So if you're one of our Australian listeners, buy the tickets. You'll wake up the next day there, slap some Vegemite on some of your toast, and watch us at 10 a.m. If you're one of the 4,000 German sickos who listens to the show, buy the tickets. Instead of rolling out to Berghain at 4 a.m., you're going to sign into Frequency.live and enjoy the show. If you're a gray wolf, a black wolf, an acid Marxist, an FYM Discord, or one of the weirdos who comments on the SoundCloud, buy the tickets. Find a group, meet up with some friends there, and chat about how we suck live. Frequency.live, 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 FRQNCY.live. Go buy a goddamn ticket, support indie music, support indie pods, and enjoy a sick show. And this concludes my semi-annual grovel, but also, as always, subscribe to the YouTube. We're 10,000 away from that trophy.
Yeah, that's a great pitch, and I want to commend Chris and Dan Beckner for putting together this festival and really quite a lineup for this. And I got to say, I'm very excited to be back on stage, to sort of like a real light at the end of the tunnel, to be back doing a live show. And we as Chapo certainly have something fun planned for our return to the stage. But I got to say here, as a personal play, I had the opportunity... 2 years ago to see Every Time I Die live in Buffalo at their Tid the Season festival. And I got to say, as someone who wasn't really well-versed in the whole, hardcore metal scene, I wasn't I didn't know what to expect, but holy shit, if you have not seen an Every Time I Die concert live, you're missing out on like a religious experience in terms of the energy they're bringing. That show slayed. They are fucking demons on stage, and cannot praise the Every Time I Die live experience enough. But this will, you know, this is they're only one act in this fucking in this rollout here. And you know what? A lot of times people ask us, you know, Chapo, what are you doing to help small businesses? And the answer is all that we can. Okay. We're saving live music and comedy.
We are saving the stages with this show. I'm very excited to put this together. It's been a lot of work, but Dan and the Frequency guys have been stellar about it. And I really think that this is going to be something super cool and unique. And again, I think that, you know, this platform is very cool. It's kind of hard to describe, but you'll see it when you go to the site. It is something I can really imagine using after the pandemic to attend live shows that I can't see in person. And also another special thing about this, it is live. We're not doing it to tape earlier and broadcasting it. Everything will be live. And it is, if you don't see it, there's no fucking Black Wolf feed for this. There's no video on demand. We're not putting it up on YouTube afterwards. It is one time only, $15, 10 acts. It's a good deal. I'm done pitching. Get on with the show.
Just like to state again, the Every Time I Die live experience, and this is coming from me, someone who prefers usually live music to be sort of, you know, more lyrical style hip hop, ukulele based folk music, and spoken word poetry. I gotta say though, Every Time I Die really flipped my fucking wig. I was like, I didn't know live music could be this fucking metal, but
it's one of the best live performances you can see. We hope everyone, you know, can make it to this, and hopefully, Israel Bilderberg's, like, you know, turn off the COVID machine and the pandemic. We want to go to Buffalo again this year for Tip the Season.
All right, let's start the show, boys. All right, we are back, and for this week's show, we are returning once again to a very fertile vein of Chapo content and episodes. I'm talking, of course, about Movement Conservatism's forays into show business and movie magic. And, you know, the last couple of times we've done this, we've been a little bit taken aback, maybe a little bit even disappointed that some of the movies we've been watching aren't catastrophically awful. And, like, one of them even approached actually being a real movie. You know what I mean, guys? Like, it just sort of... We had begun to believe that conservatives are learning. Are our conservatives learning? Yes. Some of them are learning how to make movies that are at least watchable or are capable of expressing an idea in an entertaining format. Well, we're returning to form today with a movie that is so catastrophically incompetent, vile in everything it believes in, but whose main, like, truly awful thing about this movie is how unbelievably boring it is. I'm talking, of course, about the new, just released, historical epic Roe versus Wade.
This movie right here, this makes The Reliant look like Run, Hide, Fight, and makes Run, Hide, Fight look like Mad Max Fury Road.
I have to say, this isn't, like, incompetent like most Christian movies we see. Like, this movie's incredible to me, not because it fits the usual form of Christian movies, and it does in some ways. Like, it's like the acting is stilted and wooden, and people are just outright like, I want to kill babies because I'm bad. But, like, the sheen of it, the look, the sort of smug feel, the fourth wall breaking narrator, it reminds me of, like, The Post. This is the conservative The Post. And it does show that their technology is advancing. And probably by, like, in, like, 10 years, there can be, like, a conservative, like, Shape of Water.
I mean, the thing about this movie, though, is that this is not an evangelical Christian film. This is very specifically a Catholic film. And there's a very, like, very, very unique Catholic mindset in this movie that I think makes
sense. And that's rare because most of these movies are by and for evangelical Protestants.
Yeah, like, you know, it's like we talked about. Like, it's just like someone's uncle who owns all the copper wiring in the state of Oklahoma. It just, like, goes to the same church as you. And they're like, yeah, I'll finance your film. and then you get, you know, a movie like The Reliant or something. This movie is very interesting. This movie is a product of basically like a one man, the writer or star and director of this movie is a guy named Nick Loeb. Who is Nick Loeb, you might ask? Well, you may remember him as Sofia Vergara of Modern Family's ex, and his involvement in a spurious lawsuit in which he challenged demanded for himself through the courts the right to use the fertilized embryos that they created during in vitro fertilization as his own after their divorce.
Give me the eggs.
So this guy is like a pretty unique sort of pro-life. His path to becoming a pro-life crusader was just like, I want the eggs of the star of Modern Family back because they're mine.
They had an arrangement.
Well, no, I mean, like the lawsuit was thrown out because it was like explicitly like he had no right whatsoever to that, and he tried to use the embryos they created in IVF without her consent, and then demanded.
I don't know. Maybe he wanted to do like an art project with them. I don't know. Like doctors, lawyers, judges, like we all know they lie, but like we don't know that he was going to make a baby with them, that he was going to do IVF in like his home office. He was possibly going to make like a macrame project with the eggs. Very small macrame project.
Well, I was just looking up Nick Loeb. It says your career in political activities. He had some like very minor involvement in the film industry. Then he served as finance co-chairman for Rudy Giuliani's 2008 presidential run. And then my favorite little line item on his Wikipedia page is, in 2006, he formed Loeb's Foods. And in April 2011, he founded the Crunchy Condiment Company, which sells onion crunch, a fried onion topping, with products sold at over 17,000 locations. So
I don't know why Sofia Vergara left this guy.
Yeah, I know. Awesome. He's a catch. My favorite part of the Wikipedia is where you find out that his middle name is Leopold.
he's Lisa Loeb's son.
And you say you won't keep this baby. I say, I'll see you in court. I'll see you in court, ma'am.
Yeah. Give me those overly eggs.
So, I mean, like, and also, like, there was this film had sort of a troubled production as well before we get into the movie itself. It had a troubled production because it was originally started filming under the shooting title of 1973. And I think it was sold to a lot of the original actors and the director of the film as, like, a historical procedural based on the Roe v. Wade trial. But then, like, as the actors and director got opportunity to read the script and start doing some of these scenes, the director and like half of the original cast just quit the movie because they were like, I do not want to be involved in this like just rank fucking propaganda film. And here's the funniest part, though, like in looking into this, there's one quote here from Loeb himself that I thought was so hilarious. He said, Loeb has said that the movie doesn't take sides and tries to simply, quote, lay out the facts surrounding the titular 1973 Supreme Court ruling, which is not just ludicrous, but just about the most gutless thing imaginable for this Nick Loeb character. What a fucking coward. Like, just come. Oh, this movie, yeah, it tries to show both sides of this issue or lay out the facts.
Yeah.
We'll get into it, but what a fucking farce that is.
Yeah. So, like, you guys know how hesitant I am to call, like, really anything anti-Semitism, right? Like, I'm the last guy to go there. I don't think anything is really anti-Semitic. I don't even know. I'm an anti-Semitism denier. I don't even
you
know
are,
that
honestly.
Anyone's been anti-Semitic ever.
Yeah.
But this movie is the most anti-Semitic movie I've ever seen.
It's hard.
It really is.
Jamie Kennedy is the biggest part in the movie besides Nick Loeb, and he plays a Jewish abortion activist named Larry Lader, and he is doing the Happy Merchant hand rub the entire time.
Like, everyone in this movie who isn't a Christian is, like, a disgusting kike or a dumb bitch.
Yeah.
And
those are the three types of person.
Disgusting kikes and the dumb bitches hang out. And the two disgusting kikes are, like, trying to get sucked off. And
cheating on their wives while doing so.
Yeah, cheating on their wives. And they're, like, bragging about how they're making abortion legal. And the girl's like, how do you do that? I can't read. How do you... how do you get the nose on our side? And one of the kikes goes, it's easy. We control the media. paraphrasing. That's literally a line.
Like, that's literally a line. And the funny thing is, though, because, like, okay, so the original director quit. And then, a lot of the original cast also dropped out, too, and they realized what they had signed on for. Not Jamie Kennedy, hilariously. And there's a very funny quote from him about how he ended up being in this movie. So, basically, the movie is, from that point on, is filled out with basically every over 60-plus Hollywood actor of yesteryear who have had their brains cooked by Fox News or are just so desperate for any screen time that they will appear in this fucking movie. I'm talking John Voight, Robert Davi, Steve Gutenberg of Police Academy, Corbin Burnson.
Burnson, William Forsythe,
yeah. I mean that's the one that hurt me the most because William Forsythe is a great actor, but, man, it's hard times going on here.
John Voight is in this, and the last thing of note John Voight has been in is Ray Donovan. And if you watch Voight's performance in Ray Donovan, it's very clear that the producers of that show are like, this is your son. He's named Ray Donovan. And it's just like John Voight is like really thinks he's killing people in that show. Like, this is not a guy who knows where he's at.
So, yeah, John Voight plays Chief Justice Warren Berger in this. Mm, and the funny thing is, so much of it is about, like, does a fetus have standing to be represented in court or under the Constitution? Which is funny because John Voight could not stand trial for murder, and like, because he's not mentally competent enough. But like him appearing in this movie as a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is added comedy. It's really quite something.
Yeah, there are some great Supreme Court scenes. Like, that's where the movie really gripped me. We'll talk about it later, but
when the scenes of like seven just confused old men looking at each other across the table. I mean, you know,
wearing robes. It really is. It's like pill handout time at the day room at the nursing home.
Yeah, like I would love to see the B-roll or the blooper reel from that. They're just shitting their pants. it's like seven of Betty Draper's dads coming out.
The entire craft service table is just pudding cups.
This is like they're gonna be like Biden's killing people who are involved in this movie because half the cast will drop dead just of natural causes.
They pan over and it's like, wait a minute, who's that playing Thurgood Marshall? Is that Frank Sheeran from The Irishman?
In addition to beloved actors of yesteryear who are, you know, just been circling the drain for the last 20 years. The movie is also, the cast is filled out by a who's who of the conservative celebrities, limited but not including to Mike Lindell, Roger Stone, Milo Yiannopoulos, Tomi Lahren, and Stacey Dash has like a somewhat meaty role. I mean, she has like more than a few scenes in this movie.
Yeah. I think the best actor in this was Mike Lindell. And he's like, he's on his only like scene seconds. Is like he's in a TV that someone's watching. And he's like, it's the murder of a baby. and it's like he's stole the one scene he was in. And I am looking forward to Mike Lindell starring opposite Florence Pugh and Elle Fanning in an A24 love triangle movie where they're like the trailer is just like Elle Fanning going like, I just don't know what I want my life to be. And then he just bursts through the door and he's like, I found more things. I found there was emails from China. He's just playing himself. He's just dating Elle Fanning in it. He's a magnetic presence. Like I got the Moderna shot today, so I'm a little tired, and I was like almost nodding off, and then Dull showed up.
Well, we should talk about the lead in the movie, Nick Loeb as a fucking leading man and director of this movie is a fucking disaster. I mean,
I would say he's greater than even Orson Welles.
He is as good a director as he is a writer as he is an actor, which is nice. That you don't have anything like lumpy. It is pure incompetence across the board because his screenplay includes not only is obviously the dialogue idiotic and terrible, but he can't even get like subject verb agreement correct sometimes. Like, there is basic grammatical structure of sentences that falls apart in the mouths of these actors who are all supposed to be like academic academics and fucking legal professionals.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, I understand, like, in a movie like this where you're trying to communicate to an audience, like, the sort of the process of history and of politics and of big ideas and court cases and like convey a lot of information. It's never a good sign when like 90% of the dialogue is a voiceover addressing the audience directly, who's just like, you know, hey, I'm going to tell you the thing now that you need to know to go on to this next scene. And the funny thing is that the director, like so many bad directors, is clearly influenced by Goodfellas. And the way they set up Planned Parenthood in this movie is like, you know, it's Nick Loeb is the main character, who's like one of the pioneering abortion doctors in America. It's just like they'll, like in Goodfellas, there'll be like a freeze frame, and then and like the voiceover, and he'll just be like, "Ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to kill babies for money." So, yeah. So the movie begins, and it's he's being interviewed by some Washington Post journalist. And the journalist is asking him about, like, he's like, so when you take them out, do you see anything? Don't they have a human form? You know, all you said is that they're bloody meat or whatever. And he's like, record scratch. I bet you're wondering how I ended up here. and then what he says is like, you have to understand, it was the 70s. There was the women's movement and I got swept up in it. So and then it gets into like the credits. And by the way, the associate producer for this movie is the Catholic League. So. There you go. You know, you're
Billy.
You're,
Bill fucking Donahue.
I love Bill Donahue. He was one of the most puzzling recurring Opie and Anthony guests. He would like go on there and like, you know, like you remember like mid-2000s culture wars where it's like some guy would go on there and it was like Rachel Ray did like a print ad for a female condom and they're freaking out and because it was Opie and Anthony, they'd be like, "Bill, have you ever gotten a blowjob?" And then he'd like hang up, but he kept calling back. So, you know.
Well, it's funny because Opie and Anthony originally got yanked off the air in New York City because they had some couple call into the show while they were having sex in St. Patrick's Cathedral.
He was very upset with them for that.
Yeah, very angry. It was
very sad.
So basically, yeah, it's going to tell the story like of how abortion became legal in America, seen through the life of this one of its pioneering doctors who, spoiler alert, has a big change of heart by the end of the movie. But, you know, it's interesting that like the details they choose to convey about his life, because as soon as the movie starts, it like cuts back in time to 1949. And he's like he's a young man and he's playing chess against his father, who's played by Borat's producer, Azamat. And the first thing he says in voiceover is, "My family was Jewish."
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about Jews in this movie.
Okay, the makers of this film, I can't stress, like, really, really want their audience to know how many Jewish people were involved in like making abortion a legal right in this country. It's not a mistake at all.
There is there's a scene where a rabbi is like telling a couple how to get an abortion, and it's like if Der Stürmer had a more like they still had a film division that existed. It just like never went out of business. He's like it's like, yeah, a dumb bitch who's cheating on her husband is like, I want to go to South Beach, can we kill this baby? And he's like, "Oy vey, I hope it does. Oh, have you seen the penny outside my office? I lost it. I hope I don't. I hope I can make it in time to get the stale bread that they throw away before I have to commit several rapes. Oh no."
So yeah. So he's playing chess against his father, and like there's this like strange metaphor where he's like he tells his dad, "You don't need the queen to win the game. You have to sacrifice for the greater good." So he's sort of being like, the queen is women, and the pawns are their fetuses, and the sacrifice for the greater good, checkmate, is legalized abortion. And, you know, his personal story, it, you know, is such that, like, when he was in college, His girlfriend gets pregnant, and then like it's revealed that like he made her get an illegal abortion, and she like, you know, comes home in the cab and she's like covered in blood and shit, and he like carries her into the house and he's like, I vow that like, you know, never again will a woman have to go through this, or, you know, put her life at risk to terminate a pregnancy, right? And like, you know, in the moral framework of the movie, this is just like this is like Henry Hill being like, I've just always wanted to commit crimes. I think it's a great lifestyle. I love breaking the law. I love ripping people off, doing murders. It's fun. So, and like, you know, I can't be stressed enough that like Nick Loeb as an actor is like sub local car dealership commercial level performance. Like he is lost at every scene in this movie.
A monotone, stumbling over words, failing to enunciate. It's brutal.
And, you know, he says, like, look, I wanted to help and save women. And, you know, he's like, our master plan started in 1970. And we needed, and then in the script, I had this on this an actual quote. He was like, look, he's like, we all knew, like, we needed, like, a national right to an abortion. And then he says, but we needed the gals on our side in order to win. So it's all about how, like, these scheming members of the medical community, pioneer a medical procedure that they're like, oh, we're going to make billions off of this. But then they need to cynically enlist the help of the burgeoning women's movement to sort of co-sign their criminal money-making opportunity and like pull the wool over the eyes of an innocent and unsuspecting nation. So then we meet Jamie Kennedy, who is the father of the abortion movement, and they go to pains to point out that he was tutored by Margaret Sanger, who appears in flashback speaking in front of a burning cross at a Klan rally about the need for, like, you know, racial hygiene and eugenics and things like that. The fact that Jamie Kennedy is probably the second lead in this movie. Like, he has like more lines and screen time than any other actor. Like, Jamie Kennedy, a guy who was like in a couple teen movies in like the 90s and then was on like some reality prank TV show. And he's been like, because, like, he's not a political conservative. He is the odd man out here. Like, he is not like Stacey Dash or Tomi Lahren or Nick Loeb himself. He's just like a guy who legitimately got cast in this movie and was like, it's a living. And, of course, for his trouble is being raked over the coals for it. I think, like, that, who's that guy in the Daily Beast? So, like, all he does is just like reporting on what was on TV.
Marlo Stern.
Oh, yeah. Marlo Stern was one of the original Chapo Duck Hunt members.
He had a beef with Brandon. That's when, like, man, when we could really get away with a lot, because there is like a low four digit amount of people listening. But yeah, if you click on his byline on Daily Beast, it's hilarious. It's like, man, I know everything that happened on Bill Maher now.
So Marlo Stern interviewed him in the Daily Beast and, like, you know, fucking just ripped him a new one for being in this movie. And his answer, I just want to read a quote here from Jamie Kennedy about, like, you know, why he's in this movie or what he thinks about it. And he just says, to be honest, I got offered the role. It was a more dramatic part and a real offer, and I did some research. I knew there was a lot of stuff we were walking into, but in other parts of Hollywood, I have to read, and this is a nice offer. Certain parts in Hollywood make me read 19 times for the 10th season of a TNT show, and here comes this detailed character. I'm an actor. I apologize if I've pissed people off. Which is like, it's credible.
It gave
me
money to be in a movie.
But his performance is again unbelievably like bad and like unbelievably anti-Semitic, because like every scene with him, he's like we gotta find a way to lie to get to kill more of these babies.
Yeah, but it's like, it's also like, well, is this like worse than being in Zero Dark 30? I'd argue no. And it's also like, yeah, it must. I would be demeaned if I had made Jamie Kennedy's accomplishments and was, had to be on TNT and work really hard for it. No, like this should be a law. This should be like a fairness doctrine law. Every Christian movie has to have like one kind of normal actor in it that isn't a Christian or conservative, like just to lend it legitimacy so people will see it.
He's got kind of like a fast talking Boston guy accent in this movie. Like, it's kind of hard to put my finger on.
It's a Jewish accent. Yeah. Okay. He does right. The Jewish voice. You know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really played up. It's not good, folks.
Yeah. This is a Yeah, again, this is the most.
I can't sound like him on the show, or they get mad at me. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not allowed to sound like he did in this movie.
It was, yeah, and it's one of the. It's like not even in the top five of most anti-Semitic things in this movie.
Oh no! God, we'll get to the rabbi in a minute. Holy shit!
So like they'll show you like 10 seconds of something, and then like Nick Loeb will be interjecting again with like, you know, his Henry Hill style voiceover. And they make sure to let you know certain things like, you know, Margaret Sanger didn't want black people to have babies at all. And then like, so then it's about how like, you know, the abortion rights movement, like New York is their first big test case because it's like one of the biggest states in the country and one of the most liberal. And they're able to have abortion become legal in New York State. And there's this one scene where like they depict like a politician who's against passing this law, and he's like crying, giving a speech on the floor of like the state legislature or something, and he's like through tears, he's like, I'm reading an imaginary diary from a fetus. And he's like the actor's crying, and he's like, it's dark in here, I don't know where I am, but I just want to see my mommy. And it's just, yeah. He's ventriloquizing the thoughts of like a fucking, you know, several, like a first trimester fetus, which is like, again, so much of this movie and its like moral universe does not even attempt to convince anyone who doesn't already believe it's the case that like a fertilized embryo is like the moral and legal equivalent of like your grandmother or like a child that's walking around on the street. And it's just like this guy's crying, just being like, Mom, I want to live. Mommy, don't kill me. And I'm just like, no wonder they fucking lost. So all these weepy assholes are just crying in public all the time. Like, no wonder they fucking lost.
It's a diary of a baby, of a fetus. And at the last entry is, today my mother killed me.
Today my mommy killed me.
Like, you're still writing, dude. I don't know what really has changed. It's fine by me. I just wanted to say quickly that in the scene before this, they show the coven of Jews talking about their next strategy in front of, while marching with a bunch of protesters. They do that several times. And this is a scene that, it must be stressed, takes place before Roe versus Wade has been taken up by the Supreme Court, and it is the scene that happens right before they show this guy doing his impassioned, tearful speech from the baby's fetal perspective before the New York government votes to legalize abortion in New York, right? So this is before any of that, and they're marching, and behind them are pro-choice protesters, one of whom is holding a sign that says, keep abortion legal.
That's a bungle.
They were just, we need pro-choice signs. And so they just got one, and nobody for a second thought, wait a minute, abortion's not legal yet at this point when we're doing the scene.
Yeah.
And there's a funny dynamic in this movie where, like, you know, the Nick Loeb character, like the Dr. Nathan, I forget his name, Dr. Bernie Nathan.
Dr. Nathan Jewish.
Yeah. So when he's not explaining how Jewish he is, he's saying things like, all I want to do is help women. Like, I have a sincere conviction that, like, you know, my work is for the benefit of not just women, but, like, you know, all of American society and like our freedoms and dignity and our standard of living. But then Jamie Kennedy will immediately be like, all right, so then we're gonna push for abortion on demand, abortion whenever we want. And then, like, he's always just like, are you sure? Really? Like, and then, like, at every point, Jamie Kennedy is like instigating him to like further and further push the envelope in terms of legal abortion.
Yeah.
And part of their strategy, this is really funny, in order to get the gals on their side, they have to like neg Betty Friedan into getting on board by being like, ooh, I guess maybe when we go to Gloria Steinem, she's more of a Gloria Steinem idea. You wouldn't get it. And then she's like, not so fast.
Yeah.
I actually think it was supposed to be Gloria Steinem, and then they threatened to send it to Betty Friedan, but there's no way to tell because there's no characterization. She's just a lady yelling.
Yeah, she should. Yeah, it's like some women are stupid bitches, and this one's a mean bitch. I would say the dynamic here is that Nick Loeb is Darth Vader of abortion and Jamie Kennedy is like the emperor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, and then like at the same time, they're showing you the coming together, like the sort of early stages of the pro-life movement. And as it was founded in New York, it was like very much a product of the Catholic Church and certain like this one Fordham law professor and like, and then, and like in their mind, and like certainly in the minds of the producers of the movie, legalized abortion was like 1,000% a bigoted conspiracy against Catholic people in America, and it's portrayed that way over and over again in the way that like Jamie Kennedy's character says at one point, the Catholics control everything in New York State. It's like, this is like 1970. Like, I don't know if that's 100% accurate, but if it ever was the case. But like, the Fordham Law professor is played by Joey Lawrence, who is totally bald. And it took me like halfway through the movie to recognize him because he looks weird as hell. And they're talking about the ways in
he looks like the porn version of himself.
Yes.
They keep talking about Dr. Bernie as the abortion king and the scraper. And they're talking about the unfair ways in which their side is caricatured in the press. And there's one very funny telling line where he says, they never refer to Dr. Nathanson as, you know, Jewish abortion doctor, but I'm always referred to as unmarried Catholic professor. And I'm like, there they go again, scapegoating closeted gay men.
Yeah.
Is there nothing that these abortion people, there's no low that they won't stoop to?
And it's like, I'm pretty sure the writers and producers of this movie and the real guy probably referred to him as Jewish several times. Probably every time they talked about him.
And then we're introduced to Stacey Dash's character, who portrays, I think, one of the first black women to graduate from Harvard Medical School, and she became like a big fixture in the early pro-life movement. There's a scene where she's like initially doesn't really want to be involved in this, or she's sort of adamant that a religious argument shouldn't be brought into the, you know, pro-life, pro-choice debate, into the debate over like whether abortion should be a legal medical procedure. And then like there's a scene where like a priest just like chases her into a subway and like just sort of cajoles her into joining the movement. I mean, again, like her characterization is just, she comes on screen and says things like feminism is destructive.
Yes.
And just like, yeah, like she goes, oh yeah. And then like they're trying to recruit her into the pro-life movement. And one of the activists says to her, I never heard Rosa Parks make any excuses.
That was amazing scene. Yeah.
There's a moment later where they show her getting passed over for a promotion at her surgical job for a white man, and it's supposed to be this moment of injustice, but it's like, lady, you said feminism is bad. Take the hint. Get back in the fucking kitchen. What are you even doing at work?
Well, I mean, she has her own way of looking at the world or whatever. I mean, like I said, like it's just there is no characterization given to like any of these people. They just show up, and like most of this movie is just a resuscitation of like all the things that the pro-life movement I think are unfair that they've been crying about for the last 70 years, but just put into a screenplay. Like there's all these like pedantic legal and like social issues. Like there's so many pedantic details that are thrown into this movie, like as presented as like an airtight case that like any fair-minded person would be like, I never knew that about Roe v. Wade or whatever, that just like, to anyone whose brain isn't already thoroughly like saturated with this shit, will just be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like they just do such a bad job at communicating, like portraying like any point of view that isn't their own, which I understand is like, you know, if you're a conservative, obviously like liberal Hollywood has been doing that to you for years. So I guess, you know, you get a fair is fair. You get a crack at it now, but like, they're just extraordinarily bad at it. And but like they're extremely bad at portraying the point of view of the people you're supposed to be sympathetic with, or rendering their beliefs or like life circumstances in any way that's like comprehensible to someone who hasn't read the lore, like the Wikipedia lore section on Roe v. Wade and legal abortion in this country.
Yeah, they just do pure all of their rejoinders are just bumper sticker shit that if you don't already agree with means nothing to you.
So as the movie goes on, it's like, hey, it's boom times for abortion, and they're like, hey, we're it's like an assembly line of abortion, you know, they're like, you know, it is like Goodfellas, you know, it's the scene where they open up the fucking like the paper bag full of money, and it's just like, hey, then Planned Parenthood was founded. Hey, if you're a lady, you want to get rid of a pregnancy, you can talk to Planned Parenthood,
yeah,
but you got to pay them every week, you know. Oh, have a moral ethical concern? Fuck you, pay me. You know, and then Milo Yiannopoulos shows up as like a British doctor who teaches Dr. Nathanson, Nick Loeb, how to do like the suction method. And like Milo's performance was just like one of the most credible, but like also deeply weird and disturbing parts of this movie was him speaking in like an even more affected British accent than he normally does. as like he's just like I'm Dr. Rapist, everybody. Like, yeah. It's just very, very odd. I mean, and he looks. I know. It's the point of the movie is that he be unpleasant as possible, but it was like actually one of the casting choices that landed, in my opinion.
Yeah, he could have a second life as an actor. I think this is the year of his comeback.
He could definitely be like a horrifying, like minion of a crime boss in an action movie, like Taylor Negron in The Last Boy Scout type of thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. He's like, officer, there's a problem with this. Would you hold these bullets for me? What is he saying that? He's like, my gun has too many bullets.
Is there a problem?
In it.
Yeah. He goes, yes, sir, officer, there is. It appears there are too many bullets in this gun.
And then shoots him in the head. Yep. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like there's so many like cackling scenes of like the early abortion movement just being like, gentlemen, to evil. And then yay.
Yep. We're going to make a bunch of money off killing babies. And we're going to rig the media to do it because we hate black people and Catholics.
Yeah, every scene, this is one of my favorite things about the movie is like the contrast between the pro-life people and the pro-abortion people, because the pro-Catholic people or the pro-life people, like they have arguments, but the arguments are like, no, you're the bravest one of us. No, you are. I think life is beautiful because God gives us to us. I think God's beautiful because he gives us life. Oh, we're both right. I love you. Let's work hard. And then all the abortion scenes are like the greedy kike will be like, this is because of me. I'm the king of abortion. And then like some Betty Friedan will be like, this is because of me. I deserve to buy shoes with abortion money. Just, yeah, the moral universe of this movie is very easy to figure out.
So like then they introduced it like, okay, so then they know like, okay, so New York State, it's legal, but they need a court. They need a case to go to the Supreme Court. So they begin engineering the famous Roe v. Wade case that would go to the Supreme Court. And they need to find, of course, Jane Roe, who was a, you know, barely educated, like, you know, a woman in a desperate circumstances who was seeking to obtain an abortion illegally in Texas. And then was sort of cajoled by these two women attorneys who were given the case. And like, by the way, like they're portrayed to be like total incompetents who are just like skirts that are just pushed out. I think at one point they're like, what's a constitutional case? And then they're like, don't worry, cupcake. Yeah. We'll take care of that for you.
Yeah, they
and
are.
Like, you know, they're shown to be like deeply manipulative of this poor woman who like, and then like, I guess like they bring up the fact that like Roe in the case was like, you know, they were like, oh, we're going to keep her identity hidden because, like, you know, if anyone knew the real circumstances, like, our case wouldn't withstand scrutiny. And it was like, again, like, I don't know if that was the reason that she was granted anonymity in, like, the most controversial legal case in, like, the 20th century. But it's basically, like, she doesn't even get an abortion. And she's, like, and then became something of a pro-life activist herself. But, like, it's all just like her life story is a very, very sad one of someone who was manipulated by like just became a kind of centerpiece in this big social, the grandest social issue of our times, but was like very, I think, legitimately you could say poorly served by like just about everyone who wanted to use her for a political end. I think that's pretty fair to say. And then, by the way, there's a scene where so they meet with Jane, with Roe. And it's the two lady attorneys, and they meet with her in a Dallas pizzeria, and they're eating pepperoni pizza. And I swear to God, there is a scene where, in describing abortion, they peel pepperoni off a fucking cheese pizza, and it's like a visual metaphor for what abortion is. I'm not making this up. It's explicitly referenced in the movie.
Yeah. Cheese pizza, as it were.
So, and you know, their strategy is, okay, like we got our perfect case. You know, we're gonna exploit her, and we're going to scapegoat Catholics, who are, you know, the new Jews in American society. So then, and it's also like I actually didn't know this about Roe v. Wade, but the Wade in the Roe v. Wade case was like the Dallas fucking like attorney's office, And then like the Wade character is this like Texas shithead who's just like, you know, some fucking like fat foghorn leghorn character who's like, you embarrassed this office, boy. Let me tell you something. He's like, my office is the one that brought the case against Jack Ruby. And I'm like, wow, okay. Yeah. The Dallas prosecutor's office, not like any big embarrassing cases on their fucking docket that they're feeling sad about. But yeah, they show Wade's office as like, as fucking up the legal argument for this at like every single point, like based on they didn't even bring property rights into it. And it's just like, look, I understand why you're mad about this, but like, these are your guys. Like, it's not my fault. They're all fucking incompetent.
Yeah. This character, the Texas Attorney General, I expected him to throw a hat on the ground and shoot it.
Yeah.
Oh, these abortionists. Yeah. Oh, they got me again.
Yeah. After they fuck up the one time in court early in the movie, he goes, I got to leave or I'm going to blow a gasket. Like, are you a fucking gold prospector? Who the fuck?
But I just love it's like he's like, my office prosecuted Jack Ruby. Of course you can make abortion illegal. Yeah, and it's just like, oh, wow.
That's
awesome. Real fucking layup with that one.
Yeah.
My office let Jolly West into the interview room so he could spray Jack Ruby with the terror gas from the Scarecrow from Batman Begins.
I was the chief safety officer on the USS Liberty. You're embarrassing me, boy. He's like involved in every fuck up of that era.
Then there's a funny scene where like there's several scenes where we get of Joey Lawrence as a Fordham law professor, like sort of schooling his sort of young progressive students. And they're saying things like I think it's okay to kill a baby or whatever. And then he just says, like, this is what I mean by like the bumper sticker writing on this movie. Like, it's just like it's all like these rehearsed arguments that people like do in their head over and over again and then turn into memes when like an atheist professor tells them something. And Joey Lawrence's character is like, oh, you don't think it's killing a baby? Is Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, and the Dalai Lama all wrong? And it's like, yeah, like yes. That's the level. Yeah, yes, they are. If that's literally what you're saying, then yes. And then at one point he says to his law students, I see you all protesting the killing in Vietnam, but like this is hypocrisy to me. And then he says, and then like someone's just like, well, what if the fetus has like a terrible birth defect? And he goes, killing an unborn baby because of birth defects is what the Nazis did to the Jews. And it's like, nope, no, like that's not really what was going on there.
Yeah,
not at all. He's confusing that with the Holocaust with the Action T4.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's not a very good professor. That much is clear.
All of his responses, they show him talking to his law students and trying to like get them in Socratic dialogue. And every time they say something, his brilliant riposte to them is something like, why'd you say that?
Yeah.
Why is that true?
Yeah, it's amazing the case.
Yeah, no, that's what's so incredible to me about this movie is that like as it gets
like,
into the second half,
that's basically what he says.
Yeah, as it gets into the second half, like the case that this movie is trying to marshal is that like the Supreme Court like decided Roe v. Wade in a way that was like wholly illegitimate and like outside the bounds of like what is fair or just or even like historically acceptable by the standards of like any court. And they go down this list and it's just like This is your side that lost the case, and they did like they're just reverse engineering like after the fact a way in which that was all just so unfair to them, and it's just not convincing in the slightest. We then get a really probably the funniest scene in the movie, where it's Jamie Kennedy and Nick Loeb, and like they're sitting around the house and they're having dinner or breakfast with their spouses, and then Jamie Kennedy's like, we need a jingle, we need something snappy to get people on the side of abortion. And then the Nick Loeb character sings a jingle about abortion that's still stuck in my head, where he's just like, no, this is great. Get on the piano. Here, it goes like this. There's a fortune in abortion. And it's this like, you know, like fucking like jaunty little limerick about once again, they're just like, you know, too evil. Well, this is how fun and funny we think this all is.
Yeah, that is apparently a song that in the book that this is based on by Dr. Jewerson after his conversion to Catholicism and the pro-life cause, said that when he was an intern in a medical school that they would sing. But there's zero evidence. No one else has ever said that has ever happened anywhere. It's just from this guy's book.
Yeah, sometimes only one guy tells the truth, though.
Yeah, it's possible.
And, like, there's all this stuff about, like, you know, how they play the media and how they control the media and how, like, they use each other as sources. So they're like, you know, when he's like, 10,000 women die every year from back alley abortions, we just made that up. And it's just like, oh, yeah, in reality, it's more like 9,000 or something like that. It's just like the movie is just filled with all these things about, like, you know, that poll that said that 60% of Americans are in favor of abortion. We made it up. It's all bullshit. You know, like,
no way. Not this time. We created it.
Like I said, it's just sour grapes on behalf of the pro-life movement that they didn't make up their own fake polls to support their point of view.
Honestly, yeah.
If they,
like,
were so, if they were so
really
concerned
this
about this, like,
not?
Holocaust of a holocaust of, like, fucking dead fetuses or whatever, you think maybe they would get their shit together. But, like, their side is shown over and over again to be, like, so incompetent that they can't cajole like a bunch of senile men, like, around to their position.
Not as well as their dumb daughters can.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes. I love
So about halfway through the movie, and by the way, I was pausing to see the runtime of this movie like 20 minutes into it. I just, like, out of everything we're saying here, I cannot stress enough how unbelievably boring this movie was. When I hit pause and found that, like, for like the second or third time, and found that there was 50 minutes left in this movie, like, I almost aborted myself rather than go through this shit. But so then, okay, then we get the portrayal of the Supreme Court, and this is where they're bringing out the big guns, the Corbin Burnsons, the John Voights, the Steve Guttenbergs, the Robert Davies, the Junior Sopranos lawyer from the Sopranos.
Mel.
He's Mel, yeah, he's Justice Douglas. So then it gets like this whole thing where, like, they make a big deal out of the fact that, like, the first time, like, because it was re-argued. Warren Burger wanted it re-argued because when they first voted in favor of establishing a legal right to an abortion, two of Nixon's Supreme Court justices had yet to be seated. They were still being held up by Senate Democrats or whatever. So the makers of the movie make a big deal out of this idea that it was unfair that there was only seven justices who had decided the original case. But then they get the two justices that they want appointed by Nixon, conservatives, William Rehnquist and Lewis Powell, I think. And then the next time they re-argue it, it's decided 7-2 in favor of not their side. So once again, it's just like, maybe you're not making the best case.
Yeah,
maybe,
they lost
maybe this
two
is
votes.
Not as convincing as you. Like,
they lost
this
two
is not-
votes between the two hearings. What are you talking about?
So you know, like, normally you may have to come to grips with the fact that, like, not everybody thinks the same way you do about this issue. That maybe you're not marshaling the best moral or legal case for an issue that, you know, despite your passion for it, is going to get the job done. So they have to. So the filmmakers, and, like, the case they're making has to invent a reason for, like, why they actually lost votes after two additional conservative justices were put on the court. And the answer they come up with is that you're dealing with a vast conspiracy to manipulate the highest court of our nation by wives and daughters.
Yeah.
And that this massive conflict of interest has been completely whitewashed from American history. Like, did you know, for instance, that, you know, that Justice Potter Stewart or whatever had a wife and a daughter who were like, yeah, honey, I think women deserve rights. And
yeah.
It was like, okay. And then they hit him with a rolling pin or whatever. And they're just like, they play it out like that. These guys are like sitting around their family table and they have like daughters who are like, yeah, like I marched for women's rights yesterday, dad. Like, well, you know, you got to do what's right here. Like, it's like, this is all some like heinous conspiracy that if you knew about, would like revolutionize the way you think about like how this law was passed.
Yeah, the scene where Justice Potter's family, they're sitting around and he's like, well, I think it's wrong to kill a baby. I love my job in politics. And the camera pans out and it's like a horror movie almost. It's like, wait a minute, he doesn't have any sons. There are no uncles at this table. And they're like, dad, I want to get cummed in and fucked. And the wife is like, she's right. She can't be president unless she can have abortion whenever she wants. And he's like, oh.
Okay, like they do make a big point out of the fact that like Potter Stewart's wife apparently worked for Planned Parenthood and that like he should have recused himself from this case if that were the if that were true, which is like, okay, you can make an argument there for recusal. But that's very funny in light of what Clarence Thomas's wife does for a living in terms of recent conservative rulings from the Supreme Court, which are textbook conflict of interest. Like she literally represents the people and advocates for them who are like arguing the case in front of him, which, you know, when it works to their, my point is when it works to their benefit, they don't notice this shit at all. But then like they go back in time and they're like, oh my God, here's the cheat code. Abortion has never been legal because Justice Potter's wife, you know, donated money to Planned Parenthood one time. It all has to be done. Can't you people see like, can you see the truth or whatever? And it's just like I said, like the crushing thud here of like them smashing their most deeply held beliefs and ideas and like of their study of history and the law, like just like everything but the kitchen thing throwing you at the office and just its utter inability to convince anyone who's not already a lunatic is that we always talk about like the gulf in conservative movies between what they're attempting to do and what comes out on screen. And like that to me in this movie is the biggest gulf that is entertaining from this movie is like how bulletproof these arguments that they're marshaling, how not just like surprising, but like convincing they all are is the funniest part to me about this movie. And this is, of course, all illustrated with like the scintillating filmmaking of, like I said, like a bunch of old men looking at each other.
Just standing in rooms, looking vaguely kind of confused, flatly lit, no movement at all, mumbling.
A lot of lookers in this movie, though.
Oh, man, just some real mugs. Yeah. Everybody just ravaged by time.
Yeah, a lot of crags.
So then we get like probably the other really a truly hilarious scene that Felix alluded to early, where it's Nick Loeb and Jamie Kennedy, and they like they make a point of being like, you know, Jamie Kennedy's character would go to St. Croix all the time to like cheat on his wife and have fun, because like this is what those abortion bucks get you, a beautiful Caribbean vacation. And like, yeah, they're sitting on the beach with these two like hot young women, and it's like, you know, heavily implied that they're, you know, doing infidelity on their spouses, and they're just like, wow, how did you get abortion to be illegal? I mean, isn't that wrong or whatever? And then Jamie Kennedy's like, it's easy. If you just say a big lie enough times, people will believe it. It's called the big lie strategy. And that's what we're doing. That's not made up. I'm not joking.
No, yeah, that's
a quote from the movie. And they're like, and then that's when he says, it's easy. We control the media. We even control the movie Cabaret with Liza Minnelli. And I was like, what?
that was a musical.
Yeah. It was a musical?
It was a musical first, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. No, yeah.
And then they adapted it into a movie. They acted like they just put that into the film.
The fucking closeted Catholic professor. Wait a minute, I don't remember this part. they were like, professor, how did you know about the thing in Cabaret? He's like, I don't know.
It's no South Pacific, I'll tell you that.
My wife saw it and told me. You can't beat her.
So then we get, like I said, probably the most anti-Semitic scene in any movie that isn't a Nazi propaganda film.
Oh boy.
We're like, and this is what's so funny about the Catholic part about this movie is that in voiceover, at least twice, they say, look, some Planned Parenthood wasn't enough because we still needed a network to cover all the states in which it was illegal. So we had this whole network of illegal abortion providers, which were supported by rabbis and the Protestant clergy. Those people supporting it again, rabbis and the Protestant clergy. And then there's a scene illustrating this where it's a rabbi wearing a yarmulke, and he's like counseling a woman who is been impregnated by her lover, not her husband, who's just like, I just don't want my husband to find out. And he goes, oi vey, bubba, what are we going to kill this baby?
That's not the husband? Oh, my God. Don't worry. We'll get it for you. We'll get you that baby's coming out right away. Well, my name is Moisha.
And then like
wild.
It's fucking insane. And then they show like a police raid on one of these like illegal abortion operations, and like they bust in like the Chicago PD, and like the doctor's like, this is a medical procedure, you have no authority here, and the cop just decks him. And then they go like in the bathroom or whatever, and they're like, my God, and it's just buckets full of gore.
Yeah, someone's marinating just
buckets
chicken
of babies.
Thighs.
Yeah.
They went to Stav's apartment and found all the chicken thighs he's marinating. Oh my God, he's making dinner for him and Eldis.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, we set up the doctors, you know, and it's just like, their whole plan is coming together, and it's just like, okay, so then there is an Alveda King cameo. She's actually a producer on this movie too. She's like Martin Luther King's, like, one of his nieces or something, who's sort of taken it upon herself to, like, associate the King family name with anti-abortion causes and various right-wing politics. Like, she's the member of the King family that Glenn Beck interviews when he wants a civil rights icon to co-sign every insane thing he says and believes in. And she plays Stacey Dash's mother. And there's a scene where they're watching that famous episode of Maud on TV, which is apparently also paid for by the abortion industry, where, like, one of the characters says, "It's as simple as going to a dentist." And she, like, drops a drink and it smashes. And she's like, "They have Hollywood on their side." Hollywood, triple parenthesis. Yeah. You can hear it in her saying it. It's, but again, like, and it just, you know, yeah, okay, Hollywood was on the side of abortion rights. But, you know, like, if this is their attempt to get movies back on their side, and oof, man, it's just, when you're dealing with a 30 or 40 year deficit, you got a lot of fucking time to make up if you're a pro-life filmmaker or celebrity.
That would be a cool movie. Like a movie about, like a canceled Hollywood Jew who comes to the Christians. He's like the deformed guy in 300 and, like, teaches them how to make actual movies.
They need one, because goddamn, this stuff sucks.
I'll do it. I've never made, like, a movie that's been in theaters, but
I do have an idea someday, and we might do it, to make our own version of one of these Christian, like, action movies, and it would be better than anything they've made.
I really want to do it. I have some amazing ideas.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then we get into the second time Roe v. Wade is argued with the full slate of Supreme Court justices, and it's funny, like, the person arguing for Wade in this case, like, opens up by saying, like, so, like, they're the two women lawyers who are arguing on behalf of Roe. And then, like, when it comes his chance to address the Supreme Court, he gets out there and he's like, "I know it's an old joke, but anytime a fella's in an argument with two beautiful gals, they're always going to get the last word in." And it's like crickets. And it's just like, you know, again, I really can't stress enough, like, if you wanted to stop this Holocaust of unborn babies, like, you would have someone with, like, above a room temperature IQ, like, on your legal staff. I really, it's no wonder that abortion is legal in this country. If this is, they're not sending their best, is what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
And then he makes an argument, again, choking back tears, which is like, if you're a lawyer, I'm sorry. It's like, if your lawyer is crying, your ass is definitely going to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
You're absolutely going to jail.
That was a Twitter lawyer moment.
So he gets out there and starts making, arguing before the Supreme Court, an argument that even I've never come across, and, like, you know, sort of voyeuristically following conservative politics or the anti-abortion people. He starts making the argument that fetuses are a minority. And not only that, they are the silent minority. And I'm just like, does that idea or concept pass, like, even a second scrutiny from someone who's not fully committed to all of this? Like, no, yeah. It doesn't. And in fact, like, the very idea of unborn children is just simply, like, it just elides an entire, like, this huge swath of, like, philosophical, scientific, moral, ethical, political issues that you just say, like, it's a baby, it's a child from the moment of conception, which, by the way, people did not believe in until the 20th century.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. it used to be, like, called the quickening in, like, the Catholic Church of, like, the Middle Ages, whereas, like, you could end a pregnancy up until you felt a kick, basically, because nobody believed this idea that life began at conception, because they were way closer to death. Like, they saw it every day, all the time. So, like, I think, like, this whole idea about life beginning at conception, or this whole, like, you know, this idea that we need to protect, like, embryos, like Nick Loeb was suing to get his embryos back from Sofia Vergara, is, like, only the product of an, yeah, I think it really could only come from the product of, like, an American culture that, like, is so removed from, like, death as a physical reality that we're just, like, absolutely terrified by it. So, like, I think it's honestly, like, philosophically where a lot of, like, the, what we take for granted about, like, pro-life morality and the things they say and believe comes from.
I think that is true. Yeah, we cannot face death or deal with it as a feature of life. It is an abdication of life, and so we just kind of can't. It can't be addressed because we can't let it in.
So, okay. So then, yeah. Okay. So the court decides 7-2 in favor of Roe and against Wade. You know, still to this day. I mean, as much as it's been chipped away at and has been made functionally irrelevant, like the constitutionally the legal right to obtain an abortion still exists in this country. Practically, it depends on what state you live in, but I mean. The idea is like the people who made this movie are still bitching about that, and then like there's this whole idea where like Stacey Dash's character confronts Nick Loeb at one point, like after the decisions, after they've won, and she's like, "How do you sleep at night?" And he, "How do you sleep at
night?"
Like a boss. She's like, and she goes, "You know that even a medically safe abortion, there's a risk that a woman could be made sterile from it." And it's just like, what? As opposed to like literally every other medical, you know how risky it is just to give birth as opposed to getting an abortion? It's pretty fucking, pretty big a roll of the fucking dice if you're talking about the health or safety of a woman. And then, okay, then there is an incredible, incredible fucking scene where before it tells you that this guy has converted to Catholicism, Nick Loeb's character in what is like kind of the climax of the movie does the Jeb Bartlett Two Cathedrals moment in a cathedral where he yells at God and he's like, "You made me kill these babies. Why did you even have people exist in the first place? It's your fault. It's all your, if you're so good, then why do I exist?
You're a liar. You did this. You led me down this path. You didn't want them."
Yeah, this is like, that's when I realized this is just like an inversion of a shitty liberal thing. Like, because it just is like same tone almost down to the Two Cathedrals scene too.
Yeah. It's a direct copy of that Two Cathedrals scene. And he's just
except
like,
instead of walking and talking, they're all just standing and staring.
Well, I don't think this cast could withstand walking and talking.
No.
Yeah.
God. Wheeling and talking, maybe. Okay. So then, there's probably like 5 minutes left in the movie, and they need to like shoehorn in this idea that the main character who's been defending and you know performing abortions for the entire movie has some huge change of heart. And then like, okay, so he shows up in a cathedral, and I'm like, wait a second, this movie's told you this guy is Jewish like 10 times already. What's going on here? And then it gets into this whole conversion narrative, which was like, speaks to how fucking batty the guy who's behind all this really is. So like there's this idea that like towards the end of the movie he talks about how like ultrasound technologies have gotten better so that you can like see in utero like what a fetus looks like. But the whole movie up until that point has gone to elaborate pains to explain to you that he has like personally cut up the human-shaped bodies of like thousands of fetuses. And then the first time he looks at like a new modern ultrasound, he's like, "They were babies all along, you maniacs! You blew it all up! You blew it all hell! I killed my daughter!" And it's just like, wait, like what? This guy was a doctor. Like surely this didn't come as a shock to him. And I actually should say the climax of the movie is when they show you what like a, you know, a cut up fetus looks like on an operating tray or whatever. And again, like, if you are horrified by the thought of abortion, I suppose that that's like a, you know, a terrifying case closed image for you to just be like the undeniable truth of the atrocity that abortion represents. But if you're not, it's like really, it's I don't know, like it's just me personally here, but.
Well, yeah, it's like, how do you think like a lung surgery looks? Like, yeah, no medical procedure looks good.
And like just the fact that it has like a human shape is like not that impressive because like, you know, you have a tail in utero until a certain point. It like it does not look just because it has like the outline of a limb or whatever, it does not look human in like the sense that I would regard as being like disgusted or terrified to see like violence done to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a very specious argument and always has been. But that, it's like one of the crutches of the pro-life movement. Alan Keyes, when he I think one of his presidential runs, in one of the before Lying Liars, the Al Franken book before that, the Rush Limbaugh one, or no, it's Why Not Me. He goes to some candidate event in Iowa, and all these candidates have like booths where they talk about their platforms and like what they think is important, like Steve Forbes, it's like tax shit, etc. And they go to Alan Keyes, and it's just a video of an abortion being done. And like they were like, you like can't do that. And he was like, no, I can. No, this is important.
And then yeah, like so then it's like a second of voiceover dialogue just explains like, oh yeah, and then I converted to Catholicism from Judaism. And it's just like, what? What's up?
Yeah.
I mean, like, come on, like that should tell you about this guy's like mental fitness. I'm sorry. And then like so the big reveal of the movie is that the Nick Loeb character is the guy who produced the Silent Scream movie that they've been using to terrify teenagers with for the last couple decades. This, you know, the Silent Scream where they use an ultrasound to like supposedly prove that a fetus is like crying out in pain as it's like the, you know, evacuated or terminated or whatever. And it's just like, this guy wrote a whole book of like specious nonsense based on this like wacky conversion that like, and again, like even if he like, you know, in his own heart of hearts, like had this big like moral conversion that like rejects like everything he did as this being part of some terrible crime or whatever. It's like, you know, if Albert Einstein, you know, rejected like every like the theory of relativity on his deathbed, it wouldn't make it like any less true for physics. So like it's just this, like I said, it's this very weird pro-life way of arguing where like the things that they think are like bulletproof case closed moments are like just simply not impressive to anyone who's not already of that frame of mind. I know I've said that a lot this episode, but like it was really just a feeling I came back to over and over again watching this.
None of this stuff is meant to actually convert anybody. You watch this because you already believe this stuff, and then you nod the whole time, and you're validated. I mean, that's what all, in that respect, this movie really does understand current entertainment, in that political art exists to validate people's existing opinions. And that's how you get an audience, is by finding a niche and then pandering to it. It's just that their niche, they need to pander better because this sucks. It's not very entertaining.
But
it has that part of it, but it does not have the slick just enjoyment factor that has to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's as unwatchable as like The Post is.
Mm.
I would argue that.
Yeah, but like, Spielberg can do those like fucking sonorous like civics lessons movies, and like I hated The Post, but I quite liked Lincoln. But like at least he has like, you know, obviously like he is the height of artistic professionalism, but also can have some like credible performances and like a screenplay that does convey information, a lot of like historical information and context in a way that doesn't rely on just like a voiceover narrator telling you mm-hmm. exactly what you need to know.
No, I mean, yeah, that's true. It's like the usual job Spielberg would do is far more competent than this. But it's like, I would like to watch after this, not even for the show, just for my own edification, like the RBG movie, just to compare
it. Oh, God. Yeah.
Because I have a theory I've seen it.
I've seen it. It's like not as offensively awful as this movie, but it is every bit as boring
as this movie. That's exactly it. Because like, yeah, any movie that's just about like the validation of the audience is going to be similarly empty and vacant and shitty to like us who were pro-abortion conservatives. So we hate both those movies. It's what we are. It's what we've always been.
I will not.
The show's been about.
The end of it, like the movie, like I thought it ended with a quote from Mother Teresa about why abortion is bad. And also I think it's funny to, and the movie with a quote from Mother Teresa, because, you know, given the quality of medical care she was able to provide her patients, it's not exactly fucking blowing the doors off in terms of like compassion and humanity. But I was like, okay, Mother Teresa, that's the final word. The movie goes on for like 5 minutes after that. It just keeps fucking going and like updating you on what everyone's up to now and how many abortions happened in America since this movie, you know, came out or whatever, or how many billions of dollars apparently Planned Parenthood makes from all of this. And it's just, yeah. And then movie over, it was all a silent scream. Silent screen, actually. That's what this movie should be called.
Yeah, it's a weird mix. I mean, that's always the like ideological problem I've had with the anti-abortion movement is like, okay, like, if this is what you say it is, there's, like the Holocaust is happening, like, 10 times a month. Like, it's, like, yeah. This is insane. And, but, like, the credit, but, like, their tone isn't always, like, yeah, there are some people who definitely, like, if their tone matches thinking that. But, like, if you really thought that, like, and you made this movie, like, the post-credit scenes wouldn't be like, oh, like 100 trillion abortions are being done. And then like, here's the like now Catholic guy's family Christmas card. Here's what his vacation was like.
Like, because, you know, like the thing about this movie is like, obviously it makes no effort whatsoever to like explicate or contextualize or just portray like any of the moral stakes on the, you know, people who are in favor of abortion, the people who established or like fought for a legal right to abortion. I'm like, obviously, like they are 1,000% like just demonized in like the most ham-fisted ways imaginable. Yeah. But if you're a pro-life person, this movie does a horrible job of conveying like any of the moral arguments like against abortion or like for, you know, choosing life or whatever. Like it does a terrible job of giving any honor or respect to either side of this like moral political issue.
Well, yeah,
in a way that's almost more offensive to like anti-abortion people.
Yeah.
I mean, not like I give a shit personally, but like I'm saying, if I cared about it, I would be I'd be more disappointed by that than anything watching this movie. Like it doesn't make any effort to like to mount a like a credible or like just like a halfway convincing or like a morally textured argument against abortion.
Right.
At all.
I mean, like the two points of view are like, the only reason anyone would ever get an abortion is because they're like cheating on their husbands or they're just like a stupid bitch. But the only reason that you'd be against abortion is what? I don't know. They don't really like, there isn't really like,
no, it's never filled in. Like it's never given voice at all. It's just assumed and like, and portrayed in like the most utterly clownish way imaginable, which I mean, you know what, like maybe I'm giving them too much credit. Maybe there isn't that many non-clownish ways you can portray this point of view. But you know, I'm just saying as a fan of movies or like, you know, you should be able to marshal like the best, or at least like, pay credence to like the best possible argument like on the other side, or just be willing to portray it in a way that is like just at all authentic. And this movie fails on every fucking account. All right, so there it is. Roe v. Wade, The Silent Screen.
Really no reason to watch this whatsoever.
Absolutely no reason to watch it. We have once again just stepping in front of this bullet for everyone.
Yeah. No, not even out of curiosity, really, because it's so leaden and incompetent that it's hard to keep perked up enough to catch the really kind of funny stuff.
Is Steve Guttenberg a big conservative guy, or did he just want like a job?
Maybe, who knows? I think for most of those older dudes, they just like being asked to be in movies again.
But like,
they
you
just
know,
like
Robert
getting
Davi.
A trailer and being able to eat craft service. They like it. Davi is obviously a true believer. Sir, Mr. Schumer, sir.
Well, so there you go. Probably the most offensive movie ever made about abortion. So
I am waiting for the ADL to say something about this thing. Because it's who are you getting mad at right
if
now?
Fair is fair, because like basically no one other than us is going to notice this movie. But they pick out like the most fucking like small bore like the random Twitter account to fucking get mad at, or just like any of these microaggressions. If they somehow fail to notice this movie or raise a stink about it, it's really gonna raise some questions for me. All right, there we go. Till next time, gentlemen.
Till next time.
Bye-bye. One more time. Festival. Live show.
Festival.
June 5th, Saturday, June 5th. Go to Frequency. .live, FRQNCY.live to get tickets. Links and all that shit will be in the description. Plus, I'm putting out a blog post on the Patreon about it tonight. All right, that's it.
And once again, if you have just listened to this episode, you are legally, constitutionally mandated to purchase tickets for the live event. June 5th.
Absolutely.
Be there or be screwed. All right, until next time. Bye-bye.